Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastama Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, page 101. Synopsis, we're still on. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.11.5. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary system by mystic power or mechanical means, or who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation, I cause to be sent to the lowest region of the universe. Footnote 56. Srila Prabhupada comments. There are undoubtedly different planetary systems for different persons, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 14.18. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. Persons in the mode of goodness can go to the upper planets. Those in the modes of darkness and passion, however, are not allowed to enter the higher planets. The word divam refers to the higher planetary system, known as Swargaloka. Indra, king of the higher planetary system, has the power to push down any conditioned soul attempting to go from the lower to the higher planets without proper qualification. The modern attempt to go to the moon is also an attempt by inferior men to go to Swargaloka by artificial mechanical means. This attempt cannot be successful. From this statement of Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planetary systems by mechanical means, which are here called Maya, is condemned to go to the hellish planets in the lower portion of the universe. To go to the higher planetary system, one needs sufficient good qualities. A sinful person situated in the mode of ignorance and addicted to drinking, meat-eating, and illicit sex will never enter the higher planets by mechanical means. Right, so when people take up these, you know, that have a sinful mentality and are still trying to elevate themselves, you know, by artificial means, you know, like the mechanical means or by these, you know, improper philosophies and that, then the result can't be good because they're not following, they're not accepting the laws of the Lord. Like, so if you're trying to take something that you're not qualified for, That's technically, you know, criminal, right? Just like we'll understand it in connection with the economic position. Okay, you want something, but you have less money than it costs, but you try to take it anyway by mechanical means. You know, it'll be considered thievery. So the same way as then here, then you have to pay in piety, material piety, or liberation, then, you know, with that kind of piety, jnana piety, or devotional piety, some kind of payment has to be there in proper qualities. And if one tries to take that without it, one's not supposed to be there. You know, it's like, let's say you have a private party, or you invite, you know, friends and associates that, you know, match the social status or the mood that's there. And then some other people, just because they want, then they show up there. It's just not appreciated. Right? That's just how it works. So it's not because I want, that's enough. You also have to qualify. You know, it's not a problem in wanting, just you qualify, then you can get. And if you don't qualify, then develop the qualification. So, that makes sense? Yeah. Okay. Synopsis of Pashupata's doctrine. Now Srila Vyasadeva refutes the ideas of the Pashupatas and others. Pashupatas say that there are five categories, padartha, cause, effect, yoga, discipline, vidhi, and the end of pain. Okay. These were taught by Shiva. This is their philosophy. Okay. These were taught by Shiva, the Supreme Lord, for liberating the Pashu, Jiva, Okay. From bondage, Pasha. Pashupata or Shiva is an efficient cause. Mahatattva and other elements are the effect. Yoga means meditation while muttering Om. Discipline means bathing 3 times a day, etc. And the end of suffering is liberation. The followers of Ganesh and Surya say that Ganesh or Surya is the efficient cause. And from them, the universe is created through Prakriti and time. By worshipping these devatas, respectively, the jiva attains cessation of suffering or liberation at the time of death. Footnote 57. Right, so there's all these aspects where they're worshipping the Panchopasana. Because in another place, and I think Gopal Bhatta Goswami points out that the Shastra does not mention worship of the demigods as something that needs to be done. It's not there. It will be something that if you want to do it, then you can take up the processes, because all you do is change the names and in the Mula mantras and this and that, and then you can do. Because the method is the same. You're offering 16 items, it doesn't change whether it is. But it's never recommended that one should do this. Right? This is for people who have these material desires that are inappropriate. So the Shastra then will give them opportunity by connecting them to, the authority of Scripture. But it's not that it's mentioned as actually a proper process. Does this make sense? Right?
So, Maharaj, they claim that that's the authorized process. All the demigod worshippers.
All of them. I mean, but everything that we're dealing with here in Vedanta Sutra, they're all claiming they're authorized.
They're basing it on what?
On Rig Veda.
Like that. They'll base it on the Vedas and all that, but the problem is that that's not what's being explained there. It's just like this. Let's say you go to the doctor, right? And, after being diagnosed and all this, then the doctor gives you a, scheme of medicine and diet and, some changes in the lifestyle. Right? So, now, that's the recommendation. Right? You understand where we're going with this?
Yeah.
So that means now you go, oh, I can't, eat like that, or, live like that, or take all these medicines at all these times and all that. So then the doctor will make some recommendation that's not the ideal for you, improving your health, but at least it, by some adjustments, then, it'll be less, the bad results will be lessened and, you'll move forward to some degree. So instead of getting healthy, let's say, in, 3 weeks or a month, then, it might take 3 months. But that, whether, what I'm saying? So that's what's happening. But otherwise, it's not recommended. In the Vedas, their result is that of worship of the Supreme Lord in pure bhakti, why would there be any other recommendation? Therefore, all the various dharmas and that are given are simply given because of their support for bhakti. But because people don't appreciate bhakti, then they're just taking the benefits that they get. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say you're the deity cook. Okay? So, why do you go to the market?
For the boga.
To get boga, right? And what's the purpose of that boga? To cooking for Krishna. Now, so that you go and you get benefit by that process, and therefore you gain boga. That's to be used for the Lord. Now, a materialist looks at that and goes, well, I want boga. And so then they'll follow the process of, market, going to the market.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So the better they follow the rules connected with going to the market, the better material results they'll get.
Mm-hmm.
Go at the proper time, when the fresh stock is there, deal properly with all the people there so they actually give you the fresh stock rather than the old stuff. you know, don't park your, you know, whatever it is, your van in the wrong place, or it might get towed, or you might get a ticket, or it's too far away, then you have to carry all that boga there. You know, so many rules are there. You know, take the proper money, don't argue, you know, all these things. And so then if you ask someone, let's say there's a devotee in the temple that every day goes to the market. Now, if you ask him, okay, I mean, in our mind, you go to the market, get the stuff, come back. But now if you ask him, okay, you know, you're going to, you know, Vrindavan for 2 weeks and all that, and so then I'll do that service. So what are the details of what to do? He might be talking for an hour or two. You know what I'm saying? So that's what the Shastras give. And so all those details that are given are simply to bring out the proper benefits so that you get the best results for Krishna. But they're not meant for material. But not that people don't take them materially. So now, let us say you do have a materialist going to the market. So is it not better he follows all the rules of going to the market? He'll create less problem, and at least he'll, you know, and because he follows the rules, he'll get the benefit. But that's not actually what the rules are for. They're not for getting that personal benefit. They're for getting that benefit that'll be engaged in the Lord's service. So all the various aspects of Dharma, that's what they're for. Only getting results for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, so like that, then we add in our attachments, you know, then, you know, that's where you get the little variety and things that don't seem to be following and all that kind of stuff. So like that, you get all the different people practice. So those who strictly follow, say like smartas, although, but it's simply for their own purpose. It's not for devotional service. Right? And then when you have all these other, throw on top of that the religious processes and the different goals that they have, then you end up with all these different philosophies and practices and all that. So that's what the variety in the world. So that's why you see here that Jiva, Vyasadeva, and then Baladeva Vibhushan, they're just comparing it to proper Vaishnava philosophy. It's not that, okay, they're saying this, and then what's the technique to, you know, argue that. That's not what they're doing. It's just that they're saying this is the actual fact. And so, you know, what's wrong with it? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is that it may be thought, oh, it's so technical and all that. No, it's not. It's just a matter of ways to understand how it's not our philosophy. That's it. So the Vaishnava philosophy, that's the actual standard. Right? And then you have those who are not interested in devotion, so then they come up with all of their philosophies. Does that make sense? Yeah.
And in the process of yoga that they have, they're meditating on Om. They claim Shiva. They're meditating on Om.
Om. Yeah, well, I mean, you have to. That's why it's the tricks are all put in. Even you worship the devatas, you still have to worship Vishnu first. Because they're all Brahmins, so then they worship Shaligram, so therefore after worshiping Shaligram, then from that, then they can offer. So, you know, after many, many lifetimes, they start to figure it out. Okay, so footnote 57. Pashupatas are fourfold, namely, kapalas, Kalamukas, Pashupatas, and Shaivas. Okay. The practices of the different sects are mutually contradicting. The practices of meditation and the forms of devotion which follow their own agamas are in conflict with the Vedas. Right? So they conflict with each other, they conflict with the Vedas. And I'm sure within each group, then they conflict with each other, because the basis is the mode of ignorance. So there must be conflict.
Mm. Kapalas, Pashupata is the oldest one.
Pashupatas.
Yeah. And then comes, you know, the Kapalas, Kalmuks, Shaivas are the recent ones, you see.
Oh, okay.
Kapalas are the ones who worship Lord Shivaji, who is wearing the garland necklace of skulls, pray for Kapala. And Kalmuks are the one who have a black facing with the black tilak, that's what they
put. Usually, black tilak.
Yeah. But These are almost the same sect, Kapalas and Kalmaks.
Okay. And then the Shaivas?
Shaivas, no idea. Man.
They're just called Hindus. Basically, they are. I mean, to some degree or not, they accept Lord Shiva in that. But actually, the proper ones that you see with Lord Shiva in the Mahakalapura, they're actually devotees. It's just that for them, their acharya is Lord Shiva, and they follow him and they like to, you know, do service with him. So then they end up there. Does that make sense? Because Lord Shiva and Parvati, all they're doing is worshipping Narayan. You know, Sankarsana. And so they take part in that. They're always doing kirtan and everything like that. So they're all devotees. They just happen to be following in that line of Shiva. Does that make sense? Like that.
So Maharaj, yeah. Is it when we say the Rudra Sampradaya?
Yes.
So, is it the same mood that what you have spoken?
No, that would be, you could say, is probably whether they're from the Rudra Sampradaya or not, that I can't say. Because Rudra Sampradaya means you're worshipping Vishnu, but the knowledge is coming down through Shiva.
Yes.
Just like the Narada Pancharatra is a discussion between Shiva and Narad Muni.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And you see so many times it's that Shiva and the four Kumaras, Narad Muni, they're always spending time together. When they're brothers, but they're also all transcendentalists. Mm-hmm. So then they all spend their time and sit and discuss these aspects. So these a lot of things about Radha and Krishna and that are revealed by Lord Shiva.
Yes.
Like that. Yes. So it's not necessarily but whether they're in that line or not, but it just means that they have this affection for Lord Shiva, and so then they serve Vishnu in the association of Lord Shiva.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. But it wasn't mentioned, you know, that it's a huge amount of followers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't hear about the unlimited, you know, volume of devotees. Yes. And things like that. So, you know, there must be some. So, whatever, they're there.
Does this mean everyone can use the name of Lord Shiva and do any sect like this?
Means these guys?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just that they're in the mode of ignorance. And so then the natural, then they tend towards Lord Shiva, who's the Lord of the mode of ignorance. Because those who are a little bit, you know, how you say, beyond the limit of natural civility, then Lord Shiva is the one who takes care. So as they get more wild, then he's kind to them.
Yeah. What you say is true, Maharaj. These Kalamukhas and the Kapalas, you know, they drink wine in the skull. They, the burnt bodies in the crematorium, they apply the ash. They eat this dead, the flesh of the dead body.
We don't have to get into too much detail.
No.
Because remember what Krishna said before about Brahmins?
Yes.
They know what to say and what not to say.
They are really very costly, you know. So
yeah, yeah. It's probably a form of the agoras and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just way beyond natural proper behavior. Because Lord Shiva, his ganas, then, you know, some of the ganas are very, you know, cultured and all that, you know, like Nandi and others. But then you have all these ghosts and goblins and everything else. So so then they'll fit into that category. They'll become, that's where they're headed.
Yes.
Like that. Okay. Okay, so this is their practices and forms of meditation. Okay, in conflict with the Vedas from Sri Bhasya.
Yes.
So then, yeah, Ramanujacharya's mentioned. Okay, so that brings us to Adhikarana 7, Pashupata, Shaivism, refuted. Patyadikaranam, Sutra reference 2237, 41. Adhikarana Prakashita. Here in this Adhikarana, the Sutrakar disapproves the Pashupatas and others. They claim the Supreme Lord to be formless, but the form of the Supreme Lord rules over all other forms. How?
It means they don't accept Shiva as the Supreme Lord?
No, they accept him as the Supreme Lord in the way that he's the Supreme Deity, but it doesn't mean that the formless element is not higher.
Do they belong to somebody, the formless
entity? I'm not sure. It means we've heard the other ones, how they come up with the idea that Vishnu is the topmost form of the mode of goodness and this and that. So what they think Lord Shiva is, I'm not sure.
The linga form is the prominent form. The Shiva linga form?
Right.
It is considered as a formless.
Like, or that's representing the formless aspect. And then the form comes about by...
They don't worry about it.
They don't worry about those details. It means if you're too much in ignorance, who worries? Right? You know, it's just like you're there, you know, totally spaced out, sitting in front of the television. You're kind of hungry. You look around. There's that box of pizza there from yesterday. You know, you just kind of nonchalantly open it up. There happens to be half a piece left. You know, you pick it up. You know, you smell it, you know, okay, and then you eat it. You don't really care, right? Others would have already thrown it out a long time ago, right? So, as you get more to ignorance, and they just don't worry about, you know, why invoke so much mode of goodness by analyzing things and all that when you can happily, you know, just go on in the mode of ignorance.
Even then, we have two categories among the Pushyputas. So therefore they are called as dualists, in the sense that one category believes in the form of the god and the other
doesn't.
They don't believe in the form of God. So you're trying to defeat that.
Which one? The one that doesn't believe in the form?
Yeah, doesn't believe in the form. Formless.
Okay.
Which one?
The formless one.
Formless.
We're dealing with the formless one. Now. Okay. The Supreme Lord is formless, but the form of the Supreme Lord, so in this case, then Shiva rules over all other forms. So if you have a form, then Shiva is that form that rules over all other forms. But above him is the formless.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry. They claim the Supreme Lord to be formless. But the form that now we are saying this, but the form of the Supreme Lord rules over all other forms. This is our, that is the reason why.
It says they claim the Supreme Lord.
They claim the Supreme Lord to be formless. However, we say that the form of the Supreme Lord is ruling over all other forms. So it's a combination of theirs and ours.
Okay. However, a formless God would have no parts and parts to rule. Later in Vedanta Sutta 3.2, 14 through 17, the Sutrakar expands at length his rationalization that Brahman has form. Mm-hmm. Better another word than rationalization.
Okay.
In Vedanta Sutta 3.2.14, it's 16, okay. Arupavad eva hi tat pradanatvat and aha chatan matram. It is described that the Lord does not possess a form, since his form is his very self, right? So the Lord has no form because himself is himself. Like, we possess a form. We're different from the form. He's not different from a form, so he doesn't possess a form. He is the form. Right? So when he says he has no form, that's what it means. He doesn't have a form separate than himself, because himself, the form is himself. You understand? But for those who want to understand something different, then they can interpret it that way. That's the Vedic version is written, so those who understand the truth, then they'll see that. But those who don't want the truth, then they'll find something else.
It depends on the intent.
Yeah, it depends on the intent. It's one Veda, but you can get so many interpretations simply depending upon what it is you want to get from it.
Yeah.
It's like the Bhumi in that pastime with Prithu Maharaj. and then she comes as a cow, then all the living entities in the universe, they take what they want from Bhumi. Okay. So that's the point, is that the Veda is the, you know, origin of everything. So whatever it is you're interested in, you can gain from the Veda. But if you actually want what the Veda is specifically offering, I'm only smiling because it's a quote from what do you call it? Our Undran man with the afro.
Yes.
Yeah, we know what we're talking about. He says, I'll give you what you want until you want what I have to give. Yeah. So, the whole point is that the Vedas are trying to show the one thing, but at least you're connected to the authority of the Veda. Because you see, is when you have Pramans and Prameyas, you start from Praman. It has to be based on the Veda. Then, from that, they get all their funny Prameyas.
Yes.
But at least they based it on the Veda, so then there's a common culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the Veda says it, if you can show how the Veda says that, then there is the possibility that someone might be convinced.
Yes.
Not necessarily, but there's a possibility. While if there was no acceptance of the Veda, then it's just one group against another, and where's the common ground? And so you don't have a common lifestyle, you're not working with the Lord's energy in a common way. You know, in a progressive way, and you don't actually leave the room open for, or the possibility open for, through that culture and association of coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like for ourselves, we go out and we do Hari Nam or these other have programs. These aren't your standard programs for the modern person,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you weren't following the Veda, they would be.
Yes.
Right? So we see is that the demigods are having Harinam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some particular program or that they're all doing, so all the demigods are there. And so they're you know, involved in it. So even someone as materialistic as, you know, when Narad Muni was the Gandharva, is there.
Yes.
You know, because it's just the thing that you do.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? But not that he's there and worried about the holy name. Right? You know, so at least it's there. By proper association, he could come to taking the proper understanding and appreciation of the holy name. So,
and without proper association, there is no chance to discover the real meaning of the Veda.
No, not at all.
It's only cheating.
Yeah, that's it. Unless one comes in contact with bona fide devotees, you know, coming in the parampara, there is no chance. That's why it gives the example of the, you know, you have the vast ocean, the turtle on the bottom, and somewhere on the bottom, and a piece of driftwood on the top with a hole in it somewhere on the top. And when the turtle comes up for air, he pokes his head through it. That's how rare it is for a soul to actually come in contact with bona fide Vaishnava. Like that. So we take it as pretty commonplace and it's pretty ordinary. But if we go by this shloka, then one should say it's not common. So to make it seemingly so common, then who is that person who's done this? What's the position and the potency of the person who's actually affected this?
Looks to Krishna.
Yeah. So then you know you're dealing with something very special here. Because Lord Chaitanya came and, you know, flooded, you know, Bengal and Orissa with Krishna consciousness. But then after he went, then it all disappeared. So then who's done that again? So that's why then Lord Chaitanya mentions the point about, or he mentions, I think, or, yeah, about the Senapati, you know, the general who will come and that. So That's we have to understand that it's, you know, like we said, Bhaktivinoda Thakura looked for 7 years to find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And now it's kind of like we have them just in stacks all over the place. You know? We don't even know what to do with them. You know? Remember in the Chicago temple, when I visited there, then the only place that they had where they could, it was big enough that they could store all the books, was in the swimming pool. I think they had bought an old, or somehow they got hold of like an old YMCA or something. Yes. So they have the swimming pool. So they emptied the swimming pool and then stacked all the books in there. You know, it's a huge amount of books you could put in the swimming pool. You know, because it'd be that, you know, a big, big Olympic-sized swimming pool. So it was just for books. You know, so it's like, you know, we just got books everywhere, right? You know, so. So that's the potency of Prabhupada. Right? So that's the thing. So,
yeah. Can we say that the jiva has to sincerely desire for transcendental knowledge and a sincere teacher in the parampara? Then only the Lord will get him in contact with devotees.
Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami just means they want to know what's actually going on. They don't even have to take it that far, because then you'd have to be trained to be able to do that. Like that. You just have to actually want to know why I'm here, who am I, why I'm suffering, why, you know, like that. Then you'll come in contact. Then having come in contact now, whether you want to take that forward or whether you're, you know, happy to not take it forward.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It is described that the Lord does not possess a form because his form is very subtle. To possess means it has to be separate from you. The scriptures declare that the form is the Lord. Vedanta Sutra 3.2.17. Darshayati chato api smaryate shows evidence from the Shruti that the Lord and his form are non-different. Smriti also confirms this. Also, the antagonists declare God to be subject to karma, as is the embodied soul, jiva. But if God is under the law of karma, he can neither be infinite nor all-knowing. Right? So it doesn't make sense. You see, is that you started off with those that make more sense. Right? Like you see the karma mimamsa, then they're quite analytical, and they'll deal with all the verses, and the shankhya is very analytical. Like this. But these other forms, then you see, they deal less with. Then having dealt with that, then they get down to the, you know, then the, all these other ones. Then you get the Buddhists, then you get the Jains, now we go into these walls. You know, so it's just, there's less and less, and they're more and more contradictory and don't make sense.
Antagonist
means those who are against. You have protagonist, which is the, you know, like the hero, and then the antagonist will be the villain. Right? Like this. And these guys do have the big mustache. They really like the big mustaches. You know? Especially in South. You know, big, round, big mustache. Yeah, they like them. Yeah. Sometimes, you know.
The mustache.
You understand that part? Yeah. You know, antagonists should have a big mustache, right? Okay. This is refuted by the Sutrakar at the very start of this work in Vedanta Sutra 1.1.20. Antas tad dharmo pade shat. This sutra explains that the jiva is subject to karma, and Brahman is not, since he's described as apahata pa-ma, meaning having no karma. Only the Lord is never under the control of karma. Hence, not being then subject to karma, the Lord is later proved in Vedanta Sutra 3.2.38. Anena sarva gatvam ayama shabdadi bhya, to be all-pervading because of his inconceivable nature. Hence, in all respects, their beliefs that deny the teaching of the Veda are methodically smashed. Summary of Adhikarna 7. Shamshaya. Are the doctrines of the followers of Shiva, Ganesh, and Surya correct or not? Then there, the Purva Paksha, the doubt means the, what do you call it?
Reason.
Their reasoning, yes. Their doctrines are correct because liberation is possible by their sadhanas. Since it is seen that God is only the efficient cause, just as the potter is the maker of a pot. Right? It means the potter makes the pot, but there's something before that. The ingredients, that's somehow another coming from Brahman. So how this connects doesn't make sense. So Srila Vyasadeva refutes this proposition as follows. Sutta 2237. Patyor asaman just yat. Patyur, the doctrine of the three patis or lords. Asaman just yat, because of untenableness. The conclusions of Pashupatas are incorrect because they contradict the Vedas. Sutta Prakashika. The Sutrakar refutes the Pashupatis by quoting scriptures proving Narayan to be the cause and Shiva to be the effect. 58. Okay. Sri Baladeva Vibhushan clarifies the position of Indra, Shiva, etc. and demonstrates Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vishnu Purana, the demigod Brahma says, I, the creator of the living beings, was born from Lord Narayana's happiness. Shiva, the destroyer of the world, was born from Lord Narayana's anger. From Lord Narayana was born Lord Vishnu, who is greater than the greatest and who is the maintainer of the worlds. In the Moksha Dharma, Lord Krishna says, the patriarchs, Shiva and others, are created by me, though they do not know that they are created by me because they are deluded by my illusory energy. So everybody's created from him, but they don't understand because of Krishna's external potency. So unless you come under the internal potency, you can't actually know who you are and Krishna and the relationship. You can get some idea, but it'll always be a bit hazy. Here someone may protest. Is it not true that Lord Shiva's name, Mahesha, Great Lord, is proof that Lord Shiva is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all? To this I reply, no, it is not as you think. That name has the same meaning as Lord Indra's name, Mahendra, Great King. To think the names Mahesha and Mahendra affirm that Shiva and Indra are the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a mistake. It is true that a certain demigod is named Indra, King, and it is true that the Dhatu Pata dictionary verbs affirms Indra means one who has supreme power and opulence. Still, Indra does not have mastery over all. Mm-hmm. Right? Otherwise, why is it at the end of his term, then he's finished? Yes. Right? He just goes back to being another soul in the universe. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Also, otherwise, the first Indra would have then done taking control of everything and then gone on forever. Right? Also, the mastery he's attained is only by his pious deeds, by performing 100 yajnas. Right? So it wasn't just on his own. He had to do the 100 yajnas to get the position of Indra. It's not that he inherently then was Indra.
He was working for
that. Yeah, he had to work for it, right? Yeah. Like that. Therefore, he's also called Satamaka, he who performed 100 yajnas. You heard. Sometimes someone who's a very prominent personality or the boss, and they're called the Big Mukha. You have that? Okay. Maybe that's where it comes from. He does all the big sacrifices, so he's the Big Mukha. Okay. The word Mahadeva is like Indra's name. It is true. Its true meaning is he who is the king of the demigods. It truly testifies to Lord Shiva's great power. That is its true meaning. The word Maha in Mahesha means great, just as when we say a great tree. Right? That doesn't mean now that it's, you know. Yeah. Here someone may protest. To rescue Samba, Lord Krishna worshipped Lord Shiva. Also, Lord Shiva defeated Arjuna in a duel. This is described in the Mahabharata. To this I reply, Lord Krishna also worshipped Narada and the sages. The actions are part of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Right? He worshipped others also. So why is that? If that proves he's the supreme, then Narad Muni and the sages would be the supreme also. No, yeah. Then someone may again protest. On Mount Drona, Vyasa glorified Lord Shiva with 100 prayers. He said Lord Shiva is the cause of all causes. To this I reply, his prayers were in truth addressed to Lord Vishnu, the supersoul in Lord Shiva's heart. This must be so, for there cannot be two supreme personalities of Godhead. And no one can be equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Except, yes, very obvious. Right? In this way, the supreme position of Lord Vishnu is proved. One should not be, you know, because basically it's just these things are, it's established that Lord Vishnu is the supreme. They come up with these arguments, but no, these have logical points. So therefore, it remains proven. You know what I'm saying? You know, we can't use the modern, all these other kind of philosophies. Well, maybe in the future someone will come up with a different argument, or, you know, you haven't actually proved it. You've just, you know, just defeated that argument. No, it is the truth because it's given by Krishna. It's given by the Parampara. So that authority is already there. Others come up and complain against it. You answer their points. Having answered that, now they don't have an argument. It goes back to being the authority. Is that what I'm saying? That's what we're meaning, is that you know our philosophy nicely, then it works. In this way, the supreme position of Lord Vishnu is proved. One should not be bewildered by reading in some Puranas some statements that Brahma or other demigods have the highest supremacy. These statements in the Puranas are meant for persons in the mode of passion or ignorance. And therefore, those statements should be rejected. Vedanta Shamantaka. Do we have a chapter?
Yes, Maharaj.
You should also put the chapter.
Okay, Maharaj.
And if it's verses, then put that.
I'm doing that. I'm doing
yeah.
That.
Just whatever is the method that it's there.
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. So, now, Sri Govinda Bhashya. Right. Siddhanta. The word na is understood from 2.2.35. The conclusions of Pashupati, Patkihu, are not correct. Why? Because they contradict the Vedas. Asamanjasyat. The Vedas define Narayana alone as the sole cause of the universe, and all others like Brahma and Shiva are his effects. Liberation is caused by offering Varnashra, Dharma, Jnana, and Bhakti to him. Right? So when these are offered to him, that means without karma and jnana, then that brings you to the platform of liberation. Right? In the Atharva Veda, it is said, the sages explained, only Narayana existed. Brahma, Shiva, water, fire, Soma, sky, earth, the constellations, the sun, moon did not exist. Being alone, he did not enjoy. When he meditated, sacrifice and hymns arose. 14 males and one daughter were born. The 10 senses and the brilliant mind. Ahankar, 12th. Prana, 13th. Atma, 14th. And the intelligence, 15th, a daughter. The 5 sense objects and 5 gross elements also arose. When Narayana meditated, three-eyed Shiva with trident, possessing beauty, truth, celibacy, austerity and renunciation was born. Four-headed Brahma was born from him. Maha Upanishad 1.2. The Purusha Narayana desired, let me produce progeny. From Narayana, Brahma was born. From Narayana, Shiva was born. From Narayana, Pashupati was born. From Narayana, Indra was born. From Narayana, the 8 Vasus were born. From Narayana, the 11 Rudras were born. From Narayana, the 12 Adityas were born. Narayana Upanishad. I travel with the Rudras, the Vasus, the Adityas, and the Vishvadevas. I make the person. I love a strong person. A Brahmana, a sage, an intelligent person. I bend the bow for Shiva, so that his arrows will slay the enemies of the Lord. Rig Veda 10.1.25.1.6-7. Is that a comma after the one?
Yes, Maharaj.
You sure?
Yes, Maharaj.
Because generally Rig Veda has 4 numbers.
Yes, Maharaj, you mentioned that. However, there are many references for Rig Veda where it is mentioned in only 3, not 4.
Oh, okay. It is said, Kam Eva Vedan Vachanena. They studied the Vedas to understand him. Right? So point is all these, everything's coming from Krishna. all the potencies. So even Shiva, that he can destroy the enemies, he's known as Tripurasura and all. I mean, not Tripurasura, Tripurari. Then that potency he has to be able to destroy them with his bow, that potency is coming from Krishna.
Yes.
Krishna is giving that potency. Right? So someone who's fixed, someone who's intelligent, right, like that, and then that connection to the Lord, then Krishna appreciates that. It is said, Tam eva vedan vachanena. They study the Vedas to understand him, Yajurveda. Vigyaya pragyam kuravita. After understanding him, one should meditate on him. Be it Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Atma va are drashta vya. Atma, the Lord, is to be seen. Be it Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.21.
You did mention the Lord to be Atma.
Yes, yes. The Smritis which follow after the Vedas state the same many times. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4, 5, 6. So then quoting from so many places, you see it's very easily established. Like that. When the Vedas use words Shiva or Ganesh as referring to the Supreme Lord and cause of everything, those words are used not to refer to the particular deities, but to indicate Narayan in the etymological sense. Right? Because, in other words, the etymology means that's its root. So when you say Shiva or Ganesh, you're talking about that auspicious principle of Krishna.
Yes.
That he is that auspiciousness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
As in the auspicious one, Shiva, or the Lord of the Ganas, Ganesha.
Mm-hmm.
This understanding ensures that these statements are not contrary to the Shrutis, just mentioned and agree with the greater context of the scripture, right? So if it's understood, then all the scriptures match, all these verses match. But if you don't accept this, then it becomes, you know, very contradictory. Thus, everything is clear. Footnote 59. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur refutes the Pashupatis and modern philosophers' doctrine of multiple gods. Kadachit isha tatvesa yada branta pralapini daivam traitam bhutvam va ropayat yeva yatanaha. Bewildered by matter and talking wildly, material logic sometimes declares that there are two, three, or many gods.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed logic may sometimes accept the existence of God. Still, bewildered by matter and always talking nonsense, mixed logic has no power to accept that there is only one God. Sometimes mixed logic thinks there are two gods. Then it thinks there is a God of spirit and a separate God of matter. The God of spirit brings auspiciousness and the God of matter brings troubles. Right? Because you have that also. Then that's the thing, is though you see in the Abrahamic religions that they claim that there's one God, that they're monotheistic. They only accept one auspicious God, but then they have the devil who can function outside of God's control. So that makes two gods. Right?
In that, devil is a God for them.
Hmm?
Devil is a God. That is how they think.
No.
Then I didn't understand this point.
If you say that there, God is the controller of everything, and then there's someone who can function separate from God and do things that God doesn't really want done, and there's nothing God can do about it, then what position does that give him?
Yeah, God.
You're not saying he is, but it gives him that position.
Mm.
So that way then they all actually accept two.
Yeah.
Right? And then on top of that, you throw that, then, you know, the aspect of the Christians, and then they have the Trinity, so then you have three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it becomes a problem.
No, they have four.
Four?
Three they believe, but then the devil is the fourth.
Oh, yeah. True. Because then you're taking that, then the one becomes divided into three. So it's two, but that one has three different aspects, so that means you have three of them. Four. Yeah, four.
So the site is a mystery.
Yeah, that's the fifth.
difficult to understand.
Yeah, yeah. A philosopher may hear. Oh, okay. This is what's going to come up here.
Yes.
The a philosopher named Zarathustra taught this idea that there is a god of spirit and a god of matter. That's why Zarathustra got tossed out of India by Vishishta, because he came up with these bogus philosophies, so he kicked him out. So he went over to, you know, where what's now, you know, he went to Persia.
Yes.
And then he started his whole thing there.
With that. It seems that everything will start in India, and with the Veda put out Buddhism.
Yeah, yeah. No, it all gets booted out at some point, or either boot out or run off, you know, like that. You know, it's like with Parasaram, then the Kshatriyas fled to Europe. You know, what could get away. The Vaishya kings went towards the Far East.
Yes.
You know, and then the Shudra, the warriors who could get away, they went to Africa.
Yes.
You know, so then, yeah, it all comes from here.
You get the map of Shadam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. He taught this idea that there's a god of spirit and a god of matter. In his book, Zandaveshta, he taught that these two gods are eternal. The devotees of God have only contempt for these old speculations. In the same way, they also have contempt for the atheistic Jnanakanda, philosophy of speculative knowledge, and Karmakanda, philosophy of fruit of work. Zarathustra is a very ancient philosopher. When his philosophy found no honor in India, Zarathustra preached it in Iran. Like that. I know if he's even mentioned in the Rig Veda. Like that. You know, so it's very old. It means that always the position will be there because this philosophy has to come up. You know, just like you have the Adi Jinn and Adi Bauda, so you also have the Zarathustra. He has a different name there. Yeah, can't remember. Something with a J. It was by the influence of Zarathustra's ideas that Satan, an equally powerful rival to God, make his imaginary appearance, first in the religion of the Jews and then the religion based on the Quran. Then, influenced by Zarathustra's idea of two gods, the idea of three gods or a trinity made its appearance in the religion that had come from Jewish religion. At first, they considered three gods, but then, when the philosopher was displeased with that idea, the trinity became God. The Holy Ghost and Christ. Right? Because you end up with four, but then that also, then you have to make them all as one, and so.
Yes.
Like that. So they end up with all these. So it's all based on, it comes from that, because that was in that region, that's what would have been preached and would have been practiced. And so then coming from that area, right? So Abraham came from that area.
Yes.
Like that. And so then he came up with just that there were demigod worshippers, and so then in opposition to the demigod worship, he proposed, no, they just worship God, but then the devil's still there.
Yes. Yes.
Like that. And so then, yeah. At the same time in India, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva came to be considered three different competing gods. A very foolish idea. Some philosophers then preached that these three are actually only one God. And indeed, many passages of the Vedic scriptures forbid us to think of them as three separate, independent rival gods. In many other countries, is seen faith in many different gods simultaneously. Indeed, among the countries with the lowest level of civilization, it is difficult to find pure belief in one God. Sometimes Indra, Chandra, Vayu, and others are considered independent rival gods. Now you see, like in the where he says the rival and all that, you see in the Roman, is that you have the original gods, and then their children, then they kill them. The original god, you know, because Zeus and that crew, they were the children.
Yes.
Before them were the Titans. So they kill all the Titans, and then like that, and then they rule.
Yes.
Like that. I'm not sure about the Norse, if they have a similar thing. Anyone knows the Norse? No?
The Vikings.
Hmm?
The Vikings.
Yeah.
They don't kill the
fathers. Oh, they just take over.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so a little bit more kind. That.
You know this, you know, when they say that some philosophers preach that these three, that means Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva, are actually one God. So they say it is Dattatreya. And
it is?
Dattatreya, the outer Brahman that we saw in Canto 11.
Oh, okay.
And that's why the deities, they have three faces. You know? So one form having three faces, like Havya Brahma with four heads. So Dattatreya is having three forms. And the Tilak is different for all the three.
So that's some
yes
philosophies some in India. Okay. Different philosophers refute this mistaken idea and prove that Brahman alone is God. These ideas of many gods are only the foolish babbling of ordinary logic bewildered by matter. There is only one God. If there were more than one God, this material world would not be organized so well. Because if everyone has their own area that they're taking care of, then each one would do it in their own way, and it wouldn't match. Right? And you just hope that your whole house is underneath one of them. Otherwise, if it's somehow another two halves, then, you know, yeah. Yeah, he says. He's telling the children, you know, he said, no watching television until you finish your homework. That's on your on this side of the house. On that side of the house, no, we can. Yeah. That'd be a problem. There are many competing independent gods. They would decree different conflicting material laws, each according to their own desire. Like, you see, like, Ravana just made it that, you know, all the fruit trees give how you say? Give fruit in all the seasons. Right? So he says, he just does whatever he likes. So that's the point. If the materialists, that they have their way, each one will do it in a different way. Of this there is no doubt. Looking at the material world, an intelligent, thoughtful person cannot fail to accept the idea that it was created according to the will of a single supreme person. From Tata Vivek. Okay, so now Bhagavatam.
Tata Vivek, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he does the sutras as well, and then he gives the commentary, he writes them?
Yes.
If someone does not accept one God, he accepts two, three like that, and the next step is to think that we are God.
I mean, it leaves the possibility open. or it just means that all the contradictions that are there that they can't explain, then you have more people dealing with it, so it's naturally there, so you don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. So the ideas, like what we were saying before about in this whole Shaivite range, is that they don't worry about it. You know, if the formless is the supreme, where does Shiva come from? They just don't care. You know, it's just not important to them. So all these philosophies, they only explain those areas that to them are important. And then for those aspects that are not important, then they don't worry about it. So they only explain philosophy up to what to them, you know, needs to be explained. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And that's why then it there'll always be a problems. In the Veda there are no gaps in the philosophy. There is nothing there. It's just there's more and more detail in how much can you absorb. But the point is there is an answer to everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's actually a way to divert yourself from thinking deep also. Like, you know, I want a particular thing, then I went to this God and I did that. Now I want something which exactly contradicts that.
You go to a different God.
You have to go to another one because I cannot get it here.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. That makes sense? Yeah, because they can't harmonize all this. Yeah. The Vaishnava philosophy can. Yeah. They can't, so then multiple gods makes it work very good. Yeah. And they don't like each other anyway, so it doesn't matter.
The Indian stuff.
Huh?
The Indian stuff.
Yeah. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.17.21. Lord Shiva continued, all the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although he actually has nothing to do with these activities. Therefore, the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord in his incarnation as Sesh holds all the universes on his hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? And so Shiva is just pointing out that actually it's all Krishna. And for him, it's not a trouble. Right? It means that if we take a mustard seed and put it on top of your head, you know, now you have problem walking or, you know, so, no. Srimad Bhagavatam 8:12:4. Lord Mahadev said, O chief demigod among the demigods, O all-pervading Lord, master of the universe, by your energy you are transformed into the creation. You are the root and efficient cause of everything. You are not material. Indeed, you are the supersoul, or supreme living force of everything. Therefore, you are Parameshwara, the supreme controller of all controllers. Right? So, we have Shiva saying all these things, so they can't complain. Right? Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.26. Those who are serious about liberation are certainly non-envious, and they respect all. Yet they reject the horrible and ghastly forms of the demigods, and worship only the all-blissful forms of Lord Vishnu and his plenary portions. Footnote 16. Srila Prabhupada indicates that demigods can never be on an equal footing with the Vishnu Tattvas. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who is the original person of the Vishnu categories, expands himself in two different categories, namely integrated plenary portions and separated parts and parcels. The separated parts and parcels are the servitors, and the integrated plenary portions are Vishnu Tattvas. Of Vishnu Tattvas are the worshipable objects of service. All demigods who are empowered by the Supreme Lord are also separated parts and parcels. They do not belong to the categories of Vishnu Tattva. The Vishnu Tattvas are living beings equally as powerful as the original form as the personality of Godhead. And they display different categories of power in consideration of different times and circumstances. So they're equally powerful, but they only manifest how much is necessary for the particular time, place, and circumstance of the pastime. Like that. The separated parts and parcels are powerful by limitation. They do not have unlimited power like the Vishnu Tattvas. Therefore, one should never classify the Vishnu Tattvas or the plenary portions of Narayan, the personality of Godhead, in the same categories with the parts and parcels. If anyone does so, he becomes at once an offender by the name Pashanti. In the age of Kali, many foolish persons commit such unlawful offenses and equalize the two categories. Right? So trying to equalize two things that aren't the same is a very common point. Because whatever it is you want to lift it up, so you try to make it equal to something that's higher. Right? But then if it's equal, then we don't need the other one, so just your one becomes the main. Does that make sense? So we always have to be careful of this. Because there's always, we have to remember is that if it's not Vaishnavism, it's materialism of some variety. Right? Some aspect of karma, jnana. So then, what's the motive and all that? Then it will always be something, you know, unnecessary. Okay. The separated parts and parcels have different positions in the estimation of material powers. And some of them are like Kala Bhairava, Smashana Bhairava, Shani, Mahakali, and Chandika. These demigods are worshipped mostly by those who are in the lowest categories of the modes of darkness or ignorance. Other demigods like Brahma, Shiva, Surya, Ganesh, many similar deities are worshipped by men in the mode of passion, urged on by the desire for material enjoyment. But those who are actually situated in the mode of goodness, sattva guna, of material nature, worship only Vishnu Tattvas. Vishnu Tattvas are represented by various names and forms such as Narayana, Damodar, Vamana, Govinda, and Adhokshaja. The qualified brahmanas worship the Vishnu Tattvas, represented by the Shaligram Shila. And some of the higher castes, like the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, also generally worship the Vishnu Tattvas. Highly qualified Brahmanas, situated in the mode of goodness, have no grudges against the mode of worship of others. They have all respect for other demigods, even though they may look ghastly, like Kalabhairava or Mahakali. They know very well that these horrible features of the Supreme Lord are all different servitors of the Lord under different conditions. Yet they reject the worship of both horrible and attractive features of the demigods, and they concentrate only on the forms of Vishnu, because they are serious about liberation from the material conditions. And so because it's Krishna's energies that have come and then transformed to take all the different situations, you know, then they're only representing that aspect of the Lord. So there's not a problem with it, but it doesn't mean we have to worship. Why we worship the original form? Why do we have to worship these other aspects? Yes.
Jiva Goswami points out even those forms of Lord in a pastime or somewhere it is very ghastly or something which is like, you know, dissolution, those kind of aspects we don't worship because it doesn't generate devotion, it generates more of a fearful kind of thing. So we worship only the forms which generate devotion among the Lord's forms also.
Even when Arjuna saw Arjuna in his own
Arjuna
Kulkshetra, universal
form. Yeah, universal form, yeah, true. Yeah. The demigods, even to the stage of Brahma, the supreme of all the demigods, cannot offer liberation to anyone. Hiranyakashipu underwent a severe type of penance to become eternal in life, but his worshipable deity, Brahma, could not satisfy him with such blessings. Therefore, Vishnu and none else is called Muktipada, or the personality of Godhead who can bestow upon us mukti, liberation. The demigods being like other living entities in the material world are all liquidated at the time of the annihilation of the material structure. They are themselves unable to get liberation, and what to speak of giving liberation to their devotees. The demigods can award the worshippers some temporary benefit only, and not the ultimate one. It is for this reason that only the candidates for liberation deliberately reject the worship of the demigods, although they have no disrespect for any one of them. So then, Sutra 2238, Introduction. The sectarians like the Pashupatas and the rest have established the existence of a particular deity as the Lord simply by logic and arguments, but reasoning must be according to certain worldly rules. Those who got quiet there for a minute, for a moment, that was what was behind the wall. Okay. But reasoning must be according to certain worldly rules, therefore it cannot establish the existence or non-existence of God. Right? So by logic you can't prove there is, or you can't prove that there isn't. That's the problem, because God being beyond, then he's beyond logic. Because it is impossible that the Lord is merely the operative cause of the world, without being the material cause as well, for then his connection with the world cannot be established. In ordinary worldly life we see that a potter who is merely the operative cause of the pot has a certain connection with the clay, the material cause which he fashions the pot. What is that connection of the Lord with the souls and the pradhan with which he creates the world? The next sutra shows that the sectarians cannot establish that connection.
sectarians here, they believe in what?
Sectarians.
Demigods?
It appears that, because it means they have for Shiva in this, but it can also apply to these other demigods.
Shastras are five kinds.
Shaktas. There's five kinds of Shaktas and four kinds of Shaivites. Or they're all counted as Shaktas.
Shaivites are also part of the Shaktas. The five kinds. One who worships Shakti, Shiva, then Surya, Ganesha, and Lama. Shakti, Shiva.
So traditionally it's Vishnu, you know, but it's in the mode of goodness, so it's that Satyanarayan,
yes.
Satyanarayan puja, but that's worshipping Vishnu, but in the mode of goodness. It's not actually worship of Vishnu, the original, but from that they wouldn't mind devotees coming, doing a program and doing worship and that, so they take part in actual worship. So they're all that, all of that's called Shaktas. Okay. Sambandha Nupa Pates Cha. A lot of tracking. Sambandha, connection, anupapattehe, because of the impossibility, cha, end. The philosophy is invalid because the Lord's relationship with the world cannot be established. Sutta Pakashika. The Pashupati Shaivites believe Shiva to be without body, asharira, just as a potter without a body cannot shape clay, so a formless God cannot give form to the material world. Thus, this theory cannot establish a connection between their Lord, Shiva, and the creation. Intolerance of their false notions is expressed herein by the Sutrakar. Okay, footnote 61. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in Tattva Sandarbha, "There is a contradiction of one scriptural statement with another. One must consider which is stronger. Strength is based on the scriptural source and the source of the statement. Strength based on scriptural source is judged by the following. Shruti smriti virodhe tu shrutir eva bali yasi. There is a contradiction of shruti and smriti. Shruti is the stronger authority. Strength based on the type of statement is as follows. Shruti linga vakya prakarana stana samakyanam samavaye para darbalyam arta ipra karshat. Where there is a combination of literal meaning, interpretive meaning, altering the syntax, referring to other texts, philosophical stance, and etymological meaning, the later statements are considered progressively weaker in authority because of the possibility of their producing contrary meaning. Jaimini Sutra 3.3.14. Right, so the literal meaning is always taken. We were saying the Abhida, right? And then you have the other ones, then the interpretive meaning, right? Which yeah. Then altering the syntax, then referring to other texts, philosophical stance, etymological meaning, because one could say, no, but you're taking back to the etymological meaning. It can be used as long as it's in support of the literal meaning. Right? But the problem is that there are 2,000 root words. And from that you get all the words that there are. Right? So how you're taking it through, how you're getting back to the root, that's where the problem could go wrong.
Yes. Right? Interpretation.
Yes, because your interpretation of it, because as it moves through the progressive stages of going from the root word into whatever's being used, your interpretation might not be the correct one.
Yes.
And see, of all of them, it's the weakest.
Yes.
What is philosophical stance?
Means, you know, because remember before the Shankyites would say, no, but our Acharya said this, this is our philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Though it's contradictory to the Vedas, so they'll take that as, no, the Vedas are always stronger. Where there is contradiction due to apparent ambiguity, one should find the meaning according to the strength of the various statements. Right? So then you move back and you just see.
Okay.
In regard to the inconceivable, it is explained that it is not subject to logic. Achintya, kalo, kalu, ye.
We haven't read the paragraph.
Oh, these terms as follows. Okay. Shrutischa shabda shamata lingam. Oh, no, we've run out of time. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.